Good evening. Welcome to the 8th installment of Let's Rock and Roll. I'm your host, DJ Treble, and I can't wait for my classic soul to share some classic rock knowledge with you all every Monday night on radio.dominican.edu. Each week, I will be telling you all about a legendary band from the classic rock era. We're talking 60s and 70s here that will have the baby boomers feeling nostalgic and the newer generations ready to discover something old yet something brand new. This week, we'll be jamming together to the most complex band with the most iconic lead singer of all time, Queen.
Big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. We will.
Now, Queen was formed by guitarist Brian May in 1968 while he was a student at London's Imperial College alongside bassist Tim Staffel. Drummer and dental student Roger Taylor was discovered by May through an advertisement. By an advertisement on a college notice board. Dominican has a crap ton of these college notice boards, especially in Guzman and Angelico. Check it out. Check them out. Back to the band, though. They weren't called Queen initially. Instead, they called themselves Smile. Smile, yes. It doesn't even resonate the same way. But Tim Staffel attended art college at the time, where he met this really exotic guy named Farouk Bulsara. Now, Bulsara was really feeling the sound of Smile, and both of them agreed that this Bulsara guy should join the band somehow. He had some pretty good vocal skills, so this Bulsara guy is none other than Freddie Mercury, and he joined Smile as their lead vocalist. Staffel leaves the band in 1970 to join Humpy Bong, that's his loss for ditching Queen, and Freddie initiates the name change from Smile to, I just spoiled it for you, but Queen. But why Queen? According to Freddie, he thought of the name Queen because he thought it sounded regal and splendid. He said so himself. It's a strong name, very universal and immediate. It had a lot of visual potential and was open to all sorts of interpretations. I was certainly aware of gay connotations, but that was just one facet of it. Freddie Mercury was bisexual, but that aside. Based on this alone, I think we all know that Queen would not become your ordinary rock band. However, Queen had to settle on a substantial basis first. They found him in John Deacon in February 1971. Freddie Mercury officially is born, well, the name, not the person, in 1971, deriving his new surname from the line, Mother Mercury, look they dumb to me, in the song My Fairy King, which shows up on their first album. Queen made their debut under this classic lineup, Mercury on vocals, Brian May on guitar, John Deacon on bass, and Roger Taylor on drums, on July 2nd, 1971, at a Surrey college outside of London. Mercury used his art education to his advantage by designing the Queen logo, referred to as the Queen Crest. There's no simplicity with this band. That's why I like him so much. Well, the story of this crest. Mercury combined the zodiac signs of all four members. Two lions for Leo, Deacon and Taylor, a crab for Cancer, May, and two fairies for Virgo, Mercury. I'm a Libra, so we're just scales. That's about it. All these surround an elegant Q, with the crab on top with flames above it, the lions latching onto the Q, and the fairies below the lions, topped with a royal crown inside the Q, and an enormous phoenix looking down on the entire logo. Yes, very elaborate. The art piece resembles the royal coat of arms in their native United Kingdom. I'm not kidding, look it up. It's really cool. The next year was spent attempting to find a label to support Queen in 1972. Queen agreed to record with Trident Studios due to their expanding recording technologies, but Trident found it difficult to find a label for a band name that had that gay connotation. Inexcusable now, but this was the early 1970s. Oh well. EMI agreed to sign the band in 1973, and in July of that year comes the release of their eponymous debut album, already an album influenced by heavy metal and progressive rock, which was big in the UK in the 70s. Critics loved this album, but the mainstream audience didn't pay much attention to it. Their single, Keep Yourself Alive, written by Brian May, sold abysmally, and it just wasn't a big single. But now this song is considered one of the best Queen songs of all time, and the highlight of the album, with Rolling Stone describing it as an entire album's worth of guitar riffs crammed into a single song. As I mentioned, this is an original Brian May composition. The first version of this song, fun fact, doesn't have the electric guitar intro that you're going to hear in a few minutes, but rather played on acoustic. The call and response effect on Mercury's vocals in the verses are still there, and the break with the two different vocals, it's Roger Taylor and Mercury singing, especially on live performances, But on this studio version, it's a call response from Taylor and May in the little kind of bridge part, I suppose. There's no acoustic guitar on the studio version, but 7 electric guitar parts layered together in the studio. Incredible. But take a listen to Keep Yourself Alive on Penguin Radio. Welcome back. This is DJ Trouble, and you're listening to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. Now, the Queen debut album was certified gold in the UK and the US, and their second album, Queen 2, was released in 1974. The album cover features an infamous photo of the band with their faces from the neck up, formed as a diamond, and featured in the spotlight shining on them in front of a black background. This would be seen throughout the music video for Bohemian Rhapsody, a little song that they released like 2 years later. But the album peaked at number 5 in the UK, and their single Seven Seas of Rye, written by Mercury, was their first hit. Queen 2 is a more layered, fantasy-themed lyrical album than its debut, which drew mixed reviews from critics. Nevertheless, hardcore Queen fans love this album. In fact, they pretty much only love the first 4 albums from Queen, and the rest they're okay with. Immediately, the band began working on their third album, Sheer Heart Attack, but Brian May had to be absent for half the recording process due to collapsing and falling ill with hepatitis after playing 6 shows at New York's Eurus Theater in May 1974. Luckily, he came back and recovered and finished up recording, and Sheer Heart Attack was the second Queen album to be released in 1974. It was a bigger success than their last album, peaking number 2 in the UK, selling well across Europe and going gold in the United States. International fame had been bestowed on the Queen, and they quickly became one of the biggest bands in the entire world. Various genres can be found on Sheer Heart Attack, including British music hall, heavy metal, ballads, ragtime, and even Caribbean. This album was also the first to sound more radio-friendly, thus catering to a larger audience, especially in the American market. Their biggest single from the album, Killer Queen, if you were wondering what British music hall sounds like, listen to this song. It reached number 2 in the UK and number 12 in the US, becoming their first American hit. The song you'll hear next off this album is Stone Cold Crazy, featuring guitar riffs that is cited as the birth of speed metal, basically really fast tempos with aggressive vocals, but no growls, just really, really fast tempo music. Think early Metallica, they actually did a cover of this song in 1990. Apparently, there were much slower versions of this song performed live by Queen, but no bootlegs exist, so you get this version, which is perfectly fine by me. You're listening to Stone Cold Crazy on Let's Rock and Roll at radio.dominican.edu. Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. I'm your host, DJ Treble. While that song was playing, I was actually thinking, being all retrospective with my shows for the past 7 or 8 weeks, and I just realized that the band with the name Queen is the heaviest band that I've featured on this semester, and I featured Jimi Hendrix, Pink Floyd, those sort of bands. This is the heaviest sounding band that I've featured and has the most unusual name for a heavy sounding band, so I'm enjoying this. Anyway, 1975 saw Queen embark on a massive world tour, headlining the US and playing in Canada for the first time. 1975 also saw the release of the quintessential Queen album, A Night at the Opera. Yes, if you caught the reference, that is a Marx Brothers movie title, and yes, the band took it from this. And I'm pretty sure that one person caught that reference, but that's okay. This is a great album, and no song sounds alike on it. A Night at the Opera was immensely successful in Britain and went triple platinum in the US. You'll find this album on nearly every greatest albums of all time list known to man. It also features a little song called Bohemian Rhapsody, which you'll see on every greatest songs of all time list. It's almost 6 minutes, and guaranteed everyone and their brother knows this song. It's actually the third best-selling single ever in the UK, and considered the best song ever written. I mean, I'm not going to argue with that. It's definitely up there. But of all time, though. So you think I play for you right now, right? Nope, wrong. You've heard it enough. Just tune into any classic rock radio station. I promise you'll hear it at least once a day. The song I'll be playing for you next is also popular on terrestrial radio, You're My Best Friend. And yes, I slightly apologize for the influx of music that I've been playing. It's only been about 16 minutes in, but the rest of my show doesn't contain much music. So I'm just going to be playing a lot of music right now. But You're My Best Friend is the first original John Deacon song to be played on here tonight. And this song is actually written for and dedicated to Deacon's wife, Veronica. So cute, so romantic. I love it. The song features Deacon on Wurlitzer electric piano, which creates a barking sound that is heard throughout the song. When performed live, the electric piano is replaced by a standard grand piano played by Freddie Mercury, because that's what he preferred. He hated the electric piano. But anyway, I'm giving you You're My Best Friend. Listen to this on Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble on radio.dominican.edu. Pausing for station identification, this is Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. Currently, you are listening to Let's Rock and Roll, and I'm your host, DJ Treble. I was actually thinking about this, like, I've already played three songs within 20 minutes. Why am I doing this? You would think I would space out my songs more, right? Well, to be honest, I genuinely prefer 70s Queen way more than 80s Queen. And although both eras have a substantial amount of albums released, I definitely am going to play more 70s Queen because that's what I like to listen to and what I like to talk about. However, I'm not going to completely ignore 80s Queen. So for anyone who's always like, well, you've already played three songs in 20 minutes. Where's the talking? Here you go. Anyway, I hope you're enjoying this hour about Queen so far, because I know I am. Queen supported A Night at the Opera with an even bigger world tour in late 1975, covering Europe, US, Japan, and Australia. But there's no rest for this band, and in 1976, Queen returned to record their fifth album, A Day at the Races. Why, yes, another Marx Brothers movie. In fact, Groucho Marx, the goofy one with the glasses and ridiculous mustache, personally invited Queen to his home in LA, where they had a nice little chat, thanked Marx for his inspiration, and performed 39 off A Night at the Opera a cappella. A Day at the Races, released in 1976, went number one in the UK and Japan and number five in the US. The biggest hit from this album was Somebody to Love, featuring Mercury, May, and Taylor multi-tracking their voices to create a 100-person gospel choir to encompass the gospel influence found on the song. So cool. What you're going to hear next, though, is called Tie Your Mother Down. Don't actually take the advice from the song title. This is not a testament to how I feel about my mother. She's awesome. Love you, Mom. This is another Brian May composition. And even he says the song title doesn't mean anything. He actually created the song as a joke and composed the riff for the song on his Spanish guitar and randomly started singing the line Tie Your Mother Down with the riff. And Brian May was like, this is just a joke. I'm just playing a riff. I'm just singing lyrics or just singing a line. But Mercury was like, oh my God, I love it. You need to make this a song. Even if it's a satire song, you need to make it a song. And that's how the song was born. But Freddie Mercury likes to think because he created Death on Two Legs off of Night at the Opera about some enemies of his within the music industry, Brian May composed Tie Your Mother Down as his kind of angry anthem. So all around, it's a joke. It's still a joke. But also, fun fact, May came up with this song while he was working on his PhD to become an astronomer. I'm not kidding. Brian May is a talented guitarist with a PhD in astronomy. May the stars align as Tie Your Mother Down. Don't actually do it. Okay, I'm going to let myself out with that horrible pun, but just listen to the song only on Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble on radio.dominican.edu.
coming your way, another weekly Bosco break and your update of Dominican volleyball. The Collins Center crowd rose to its feet and roared when sophomore Amy Steinward slammed her match-high 12th kill to secure the sweep for the Dominican University of California's women's volleyball team versus Concordia Irvine. The Penguins found themselves trailing in every set but secured their second sweep of the season to top the newest member of the PacWest Conference on Thursday, October 22nd. Unfortunately, just the opposite occurred in their last match against Dixie State on Saturday, October 24th. A game out of first place in the PacWest and winners of their last five matches, Dixie State used a balanced attack to hold on in a closely contested match. The Penguins were dealt a blow early on. Leading 13-12, the team's leading hitter, sophomore Amy Steinward, dove for a dig. She crumpled up after the attempt and did not return for the rest of the match. Dominican led 13-12 at that point, but Dixie State went on an 8-3 run to take a 20-17 lead and held on to take the first set 25-21. The following match, Dominican fell 20-25, and the final match was lost by 28-30. Dominican heads to Bay Area rival Notre Dame de Namur on Wednesday, October 28th for a 7 p.m. match. Then the Penguins return home for a 6-match homestand. Tune in next week for more of your Dominican sports updates. That wraps up your Bosco break. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Trouble. This hour, we've been listening and talking all about Queen. And yep, I'm really enjoying talking about this band. Queen has already established themselves as one of the best stadium rock bands, and you just had to see them live back in the day. During 1976, the band performed a free concert at London's Hyde Park, organized by entrepreneur Richard Branson, the guy that invented Virgin Mobile, Virgin Airlines, Virgin Records, etc. And this was attended by 150,000 people. During their Day at the Races tour, Queen performed sold-out shows at Madison Square Garden and Earl's Court in London. Like I said, they were huge. Queen released their sixth album, News of the World, in 1977, going four times platinum in the US and twice in the UK. And our next song is, no, just kidding, I'm not playing songs for a while. But this album features two songs you will always hear at sporting events, We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions. Now I like We Will Rock You, how can you not? I play them in my intro to this show tonight, so clearly I like the song, but I despise We Are the Champions. Actually, sports anthems in general just really irritate me. I love sports. I love anthems. I hate sports anthems. The songs constantly get overplayed, and there are just a bunch of ignorant people that just sit there and they're like, oh, this is so cool. And they don't understand that. They probably don't even know the lyrics to We Will Rock You. So that's actually something I want to do, is go to a baseball game, and the next time they play We Will Rock You, and a massive 40,000 people crowd do that stupid I want to see if they can sing along to the song and not screw up. Just saying. I hear them all the time, and it makes me want to puke. These songs are unintentionally catered to an audience that are immune to any human decency and will drunkenly sing along to anything with a beat. Also, see Don't Stop Believin'. I hate it. I hate it all. I can't enjoy it. Can't enjoy these Queen songs anymore without this bitter attitude I have towards it being used at sports games. It's just, Anyway, you didn't tune into the show to hear me rant. You tuned in for the music and to hear me talk about Queen. So we're going to keep on doing that. But let's move on to the release of Queen's seventh album, Jazz, in 1978. Songs featured on this album are Fat Bottom Girls and Bicycle Race, two of the most ridiculous songs I've ever heard. For the music video for Bicycle Race, Queen rented Wimbledon Stadium for the day to shoot the video, with 65 naked female models hired to stage a nude bicycle race. It's a typical day in a rock star, am I right? Another popular song you'll find on Jazz is Don't Stop Me Now, which is a common song used in flash mobs. It's pretty much where everyone knows the song is, dance along to it doing flash mob. But it's catchy and it's really fun. But actually, if you want the best lip-syncing rendition of this song, look up actor Paul Rudd's take performed on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. It is Everything Beautiful and Nothing Hurt. It's like Freddie Mercury never died. It's so great. Makes me laugh every time. But Queen went on tour to promote the album in 1978, which led to the release of their first album, Live Killers, in 1979, going twice platinum in the US. I'm amazed it took the band this long to release a live album after so many successful tours and live performances. The single Crazy Little Thing Called Love, featured on their eighth album, The Game, was released and charted top 10 in nearly every country. Mercury wrote the song himself and played rhythm guitar on the record and live, this being the first time Mercury ever played guitar in concert. And now we enter the 80s, where Queen kicked off the decade with another number one hit, Another One Bites the Dust. The album was also released in this year, and you're going to hear the opening track of the album, Play the Game. The music video for this song features two distinct differences. May's signature red special guitar is no longer prevalent, instead he plays a Fender Stratocaster. And Mercury has a mustache and short hair, and it's just totally different. You can tell Queen really changed in the 80s. But the song, as well as the album in general, is the first to feature synthesizers, which were huge in the 80s. They denied it. Even on their album sleeve, it says, no synthesizers or no synths or something like that. But apparently, according to their producer, the synth sounding on the album was actually really intricate guitar playing that sounded like synthesizers. But to each their own, we'll believe what we want to believe. But regardless, enjoy Play the Game on Let's Rock and Roll with DJ Treble here on Penguin Radio. Love that song. That is honestly one of my favorite Queen songs of all time. I just love the high note Freddie just hits at the very end. It's intense. It's great. I love it. Anyway, welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll. Quick fact about Another One Bites the Dust. It wouldn't have been a single if it had not been for Michael Jackson. Personal opinion, after attending a Queen concert in LA And he said, well, and he told him backstage, release it as a single in the United States. Well, he knows a little something about successful songs, so good thing they took his advice. But 1980 continued to be a big year for Queen, performing 3 sold-out shows at Madison Square Garden and releasing the soundtrack they had recorded for the movie Flash Gordon. In 1981, Queen performed in South America for the very first time during the Game Tour, becoming the first major rock band to play in Latin American stadiums. One notable concert was one of 5 nights in Argentina, performing for 300,000 people in Buenos Aires. Near the end of the tour, Queen performed 2 sold-out nights at the Montreal Forum in Canada, which was recorded in their live album, Queen Rock Montreal, a fantastic album in its own respect. And seeing the film for it too, oh my god, I love it. I just love it. In the beginning, they play this really fast version of We Will Rock You, and it doesn't even sound like the original, but it just sounds way cooler. And sounds more Queen, to be honest. But in preparation for their next album, Hot Space, Queen collaborated with David Bowie on the single Under Pressure, which happened spontaneously as Bowie popped in for a visit while Queen was recording. That single was released in 1981 and was extremely popular. Also in 1981, Queen released their first compilation album full of their greatest hits from 1974 to 1981, which would become the best-selling album in UK chart history and has spent 450 weeks in the UK album chart. Now, if you're doing math, that's nearly 9 years. 9 years, you guys. It has also gone 8 times platinum in the United States. Entering 1982, the band released Hot Space, which sounds the most 80s Queen has ever sounded. It's practically a pop record, and I really, really, really don't like it. Around the time of this record came Queen's turbulent period. Never actually quite understood what the turbulent period was, but it was something along the lines of Roger Taylor and Brian May hating their new sound, that the new direction Queen was going in, and putting the blame on Freddie Mercury's personal manager, Paul Prenter. Now this Paul guy is kind of funny. He was a tool. He disconnected the band from their United States market by insisting against radio play, which was the reason why they were popular in North America in the first place. And because of this drastic decision, Queen really decreased their popularity in North America, while their popularity in South America was rapidly increasing. So there's a shift in where their mainstream audience is, and it's not the United States, which is a big blow for a band, something like that. But from their audience, they're also disconnected from them because Queen really loved performing for their fans and kind of interacting with their fans as much as possible and connecting to them with their music. Paul Prenter was like, nope, you need to be high and mighty above the fans because you're rock star musicians, especially you, Freddie. You're the best. You're the best. And because this attitude he had towards Freddie Mercury, the manager himself, good old Pauly, wouldn't allow the band to see Mercury, their own bandmate. That's going too far. But as a consequence, Queen stopped touring in North America for their next tour, as I mentioned, with the exception of an appearance on Saturday Night Live. In general, the band quits touring for 1983 and focuses on recording their next album, the 11th studio album, The Works. Songs featured on here are the singles Radio Gaga and I Want to Break Free, the next song you'll hear in just a moment. Another John Deacon composition, the song is more famous for its music video. All the band members are dressed in women's clothes. The idea credits belong to Roger Taylor, who looks unintentionally pretty as a woman in the video. Yeah, gives me a little bit of a self-esteem issue, but anyway. But this music video is actually a parody of a British soap opera, one of the most popular ones there. It was a comedy gold in the UK, but it was actually banned in the United States because kind of the plot in the music video is there's Roger Taylor's dressed as a schoolgirl and Freddie Mercury's dressed as kind of like the main housewife and Brian May's another housewife and then John Deacon plays like an old grandma. And Freddie Mercury's character, which dons like a wig, fake breasts, and with the mustache, it's really funny, and a mini skirt, while Roger Taylor is dressed in blonde pigtails and a schoolgirl uniform. This is all so funny. But they both feel really trapped in their lives, pretty much, and they literally want to break free from their kind of normal lives and really wonder, like, oh, if I had fallen in love or done this sort of thing or do this, how would my life have turned out? And they kind of go on this conquest of sorts, and it's all very campy and kind of funny. at the end, they just kind of return, especially with the song, it ends like, well, life still goes on, and they kind of just revert back to their normal state. But the video is actually really funny. But, I mean, the United States didn't like it. They just don't understand British humor. Oh, well. But MTV banned it. Yeah. But this obviously didn't help Queen's decreasing popularity in the United States. But the single did reach the top 10 in Europe and South America in 1984. This is regarded as an anthem against oppression in South America, which causes a little bit of some strife. But Deacon wrote it with the theme of a love song in mind, probably thinking about his wife again or something. The misinterpretation from their South American audience was prevalent when Queen performed this live in Rio de Janeiro in 1985. When Freddie Mercury donned the female outfit he wore in the music video, the fake breasts, the wig, and everything, the audience threw stones at him. They literally threw stones at him, believing him cross-dressing was an indication that the song they considered sacred and about freedom was being mocked. Mercury was confused and disappointed by it because he's like, well, I'm an artist. I'm just performing as an artist. It's not anything political. But South American, the South American audience was kind of like, they took very different interpretations. So this is the one instance where the listener's interpretation of a song is not the right one. But certain songs are obviously made ambiguously enough to incite multiple interpretations from various listeners and fans. Take pretty much the entire Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon. While there's a general theme to it, you can kind of interpret it as you want. I Want to Break Free, if you paid attention to the lyrics, is straightforward, as well as in the music video. I don't really see a fight against the government in the man tone in the song, nor in the lyrics, but I understand that the title is kind of misleading, like, I want to break free. Free from what? Oppression! Well, yes. But to each their own. Let's listen to the song now. Finally, this is I Want to Break Free on Let's Rock and Roll, only on Penguin Radio.
I want to break free. Break free.
quick comment about the song. Every time I sing it in my head or out loud, because let's be honest, who doesn't sing out loud? I always imagine myself as a Disney princess singing it with the hopeful eyes and the pure naivete and just kind of the whole, you know, kind of like an innocent little princess. I have no idea why. I just do it. But I mean, whatever. I enjoy it. But welcome back to Let's Rock and Roll on Penguin Radio. This is your host, DJ Treble. We're wrapping things up here on the 8th installment of the show tonight, paying an hour-long tribute to Queen. After the release of The Works, Queen went on tour, which featured 9 sold-out shows in South Africa, where they played for the first time. Controversy arose for this band in South Africa, though. The British government thought Queen performing there was in violation of the worldwide divestment efforts. Now let's give some little political background on this one. South Africa at this time had a policy implemented called apartheid, or the separation of white South Africans and non-white South Africans. And even the non-whites were further separated. It's basically, you know, segregation, which the United States is a little bit familiar with. But this resulted in non-white political representation being abolished in South Africa and black people being deprived of their South African citizenship. The British government were constantly trying to be persuaded by the United Nations to implement economic sanctions to establish divestment to diminish the apartheid system. But the British government refused. Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher opposed divestment, thinking it would actually hurt South Africa's economy. Well, I mean, so does pretty much segregation, but I mean, whatever. Queen didn't care. They cared about playing their music to adoring fans, even if it meant integrated audiences. Despite their philanthropic efforts towards South Africa, they donated money to a school for the blind and deaf. The United Nations placed Queen on their list of blacklisted artists. Enough about politics, back to the music. On July 13, 1985, Queen performed at Live Aid at Wembley Stadium in London, to which 72,000 people attended and 1.9 billion people watched on TV, the biggest audience to tune into anything at that time. And it was huge for Queen. It was considered their best live performance ever. Queen became increasingly popular again after Live Aid, a good momentum for the band as they released their next album, A Kind of Magic, in 1986. The tour to promote the album was the last tour for Freddie Mercury. A live double album, Queen at Wembley, was created during this tour. Queen's final live performance with Mercury was at Knebworth Park in England, which sold out in 2 hours and attended by 120,000 fans. One of the biggest rock concerts in Eastern Europe was during this tour, when Queen performed behind the Iron Curtain in front of 80,000 people in Budapest. This tour alone was attended by over 1 million people, 400,000 alone in the UK, a record at the time. Queen released another album in 1989, The Miracle. This was the first album of theirs to feature more collaborative songwriting rather than individual songs mashed into an album. Around this time, fans began to notice a physical change in Mercury, looking more ill. Rumors circulated that Freddie was diagnosed with AIDS, which he outright denied. The last album he would be featured on with Queen was 1991's Innuendo, well, while he's alive, anyway. Mercury was horrendously sick during the recording process, leading Brian May to question his singing abilities if he can even walk. However, Mercury had no trouble nailing the vocals on the album because this is Freddie Mercury we're talking about, the best singer of all time. But especially on the song, The Show Must Go On. On November 23, 1991, Freddie Mercury prepared a statement on his deathbed confirming he had AIDS. Within 24 hours, he died of bronchial pneumonia, a complication of AIDS. In memoriam, Bohemian Rhapsody was re-released as a single, along with These Are the Days of Our Lives, with the music video featuring the last scenes of Mercury on camera. And I've seen that music video, and I've cried. On April 20th, 1992, the Freddie Mercury tribute concert was held at Wembley Stadium to 72,000 heartbroken fans. Notable performers were David Bowie, especially in a duet with Annie Lennox where they performed Under Pressure, and I could tell there is some real raw emotion during that performance, and it's definitely one that's always stuck in my mind, because I'm pretty sure they were singing their heart out for Freddie, and you could tell they were on the verge of tears. It's a really great performance, but David Bowie performed Annie Lennox, Def Leppard, Robert Plant, Guns N' Roses, Elton John, George Michael, and Metallica, along with the 3 remaining Queen members. Guinness Book of World Records lists this as the largest rock star benefit concert, televised to 1.2 billion viewers worldwide, and raising over $30 million for AIDS charities. A posthumous Queen album featuring Mercury was released in 1995. Now this is the last album to feature Freddie Mercury. Made in Heaven. In 1997, Queen released the song No One But You, Only the Good Die Young, on another compilation album as a bonus track. Shortly after, Queen performed alongside Elton John and the Beaux-Arts Ballet in Paris in dedication to Mercury. And this kind of convinced Brian May to tour as Queen again, without Freddie Mercury. This was John Deacon's final performance in Queen and in the public eye, as he chose to retire from the music industry. Always dubbed as the quiet member of the band, he never cared for the publicity that came with Queen, so his retirement was inevitable. But today, Queen is still thriving and touring, with the two remaining members, Brian May and Roger Taylor, reuniting in 2004 and touring in 2005 as Queen plus Paul Rogers. Paul Rogers was a former lead singer of Bad Company, another popular British band and one of my favorites. But since 2011, Queen has teamed up with American Idol runner-up Adam Lambert on vocals to tour as Queen plus Adam Lambert and potentially open to creating new material with him officially on vocals. Well, he's no Freddie, but trust me, he's a pretty damn good singer. Queen also performed We Will Rock You alongside British singer Jessie J at the closing ceremonies of the 2012 Summer Olympics in London. The most recent thing to come out of the subject of Queen is in November 2014, where the album Queen Forever was released, containing forgotten tracks with Mercury on vocals, with different takes on original Queen songs, as well as never-heard-before songs. Queen will forever go down in rock and roll infamy as one of the biggest influences in the hard rock and heavy metal genre, as well as a plethora of other genres of music, including pop and, well, general rock and roll. For me, Queen was a band I always loved, but never talked about so much as I do other bands like Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, who obviously get more rock and roll publicity, I suppose. But Queen's always up there, and it's always a good band to listen to. And they're so cool. They're such a cool band. And you have to admire the man that is Freddie Mercury. He is the greatest vocalist of all time. His vocal range was basically unhuman. It was almost like he was bionic. He could hit every note. Literally, every note. It's amazing. But, however, Freddie Mercury wouldn't have been able to shine without his bandmates. Because Brian May is a really amazing guitarist, and what he could kind of manipulate with his guitar is amazing. And Roger Taylor is obviously pretty good at the drums in his own respect. And John Deacon, John Deacon and Roger Taylor, they really created that really great backbone, which is always so vital in a classic rock band or a rock and roll band. But yes, Freddie Mercury is obviously the most famous, and the Queen in general doesn't even feature Freddie Mercury as their prominent figure. Obviously, because he is the front man and kind of the flamboyant, showy type, he obviously got the most publicity and kind of the biggest connection to Queen, but he didn't run the band musically or lyrically. Brian May, John Deacon, and Roger Taylor all have written songs, and two have even killed it on vocals. Off of Night at the Opera, listen to May's 39. And Taylor's I'm in Love with My Car. Both are some of my favorite Queen songs, and both have awesome vocals, especially Taylor. He's one of the few musicians that can sing in falsetto, because that's where his vocal range is. It's pretty awesome. Queen is love, Queen is life. Well, that concludes tonight's show. Don't forget to check out all the other DJs at radio.dominican.edu. I hope you enjoyed this little tribute to Queen tonight. This is DJ Trouble signing off with Bohemian Rhapsody. Okay, yeah, I did say I wasn't going to play it on the show, but I mean, how can you not? And a little tidbit of why this show started a little bit late today. Radio.dominican.edu was playing Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin, and I cannot skip Led Zeppelin. So I actually highly recommend that you tune in next week, because I'll be talking all about Led Zeppelin. I only have two more shows after this, and it's been really, really fun. But I'm going to make sure these last two shows are some of my best shows yet. But this is Penguin Radio, and you're going to be listening to Bohemian Rhapsody on radio.dominican.edu, the official station of Dominican University of California. Go Penguins!
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy, because I'm easy come, easy go.
Thank you.